Welcome to the Health Tech Podcast. Here we talk about everything healthcare and technology, and I'm your host, James Summery. Hey, everybody. This week, I'm joined by Aline Jégou, and she is Global Head of Operations and Quality at Roche Diabetes Care. Started the company in 2009, has had a load of different leadership positions, including leader of a chemical production site, matrix leader in a global environment for various different units, and head of operations in a diagnostics business area before going to the current role in diabetes care in 2021. So Aline, thank you for coming on. Welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you, James. Really excited to be here today. Thank you for the invitation.
You're very, very welcome. No, delighted to have you on. So Aline, whereabouts are you speaking to us from, first of all? It's quite clear that your accent is not an English one. And yes, France is a wonderful part of the world where Jessica and I are getting married in a couple of months. So, part of the world that I have a fond admiration of. But whereabouts in France are you from? And whereabouts are you speaking to us from today?
Yes, thank you. So congratulations on your marriage first.
Thank you.
It'd be really exciting. I'm dialing today from central Switzerland. I am at the Roche Diagnostic site in Rotkreuz. So it's a great place to be, surrounded by lots of lakes and great mountains. And so you get a lot of energy to work here. And it has also a unique flow of having all four diagnostics from R&D, production, marketing, sales. So really a diverse environment.
Beautiful, beautiful. So Aline, the way that we start these podcasts is for you to tell your story. Now, obviously getting to global head of operations at a pharma company, it's quite the role. And I think for quite a lot of people listening that have got ambitions of working in pharma, rising the ranks, it's sort of one of those pinnacle roles, isn't it? Global head of operations and quality. I mean, goodness me, it's a heck of a title. So tell us the whole story. So how did you start your career? What did you study? And how does one go about getting to global head of operations at a pharma company and Roche?
Yes, sure. I was also not really aiming for this at the beginning. And I will start really, really, really early. So I was born, to your question before, in east of France. It's a small village called Adol. It's near Epinal, the capital of the image in France. And I was born in a wealthy family, but with an understanding of in a rural part, and everything which is good is in France, right? So you buy a French car, you eat French food, you go on vacation in France. And I always starting with why. And I would say stop asking why to my parents. So I was a bit difficult child, I think, because I wanted always to understand what is it outside of it, outside maybe of where I am. And I had a big need to see different things. So like having always a contradiction idea in my head. And I loved also to play more with Legos and cars and building things. And I always remember, I'm still angry at my father for this. I wanted always to have, I don't remember how old I was, 6, 7, 10. I wanted always to have this chemistry box. So we had this chemistry box where you can do a lot of experiments and so on. I was in the shop with my father and he bought the chemistry box. So I was so excited because I would get the chemistry box. Well, actually, it was not for me. It was for my cousin. And I got the Barbie. So I was really, annoyed about this and, really, really sad. But of course, I didn't give up on the chemistry box. So moving forward, and as I had some facilities also to learn, and I moved to more the scientific field when I was at school. I have to say in France, if you are good at school, you will be more push to go for science.
Interesting.
What I think is also good, at least in the part of France I was. So I was pushed to go to science. I didn't know really what I want to do, but I always had this chemistry box in my mind. So I started studying mathematics, biology, chemistry, and I really love chemistry, actually. So I continued on that path. I went to university in Strasbourg and in Toulouse, so starting a bit to move some kilometers from where I was born. And I was having the opportunity to do my PhD in really diverse labs with a lot of different nationality in France. Mm. I had a PhD in photovoltaic, so organic chemistry, but for photovoltaic, because it has also a good impact for the environment. And this is something also having being raised in the campaign, I really loved it. So already at that time, I wanted to do something that has an impact for people or for the world. I was really ambitious in a way that I love to do some research. And I was always someone really optimistic and trying always, okay, even if it's impossible, let's try. So at that time, I really wanted to continue and be a researcher in university, maybe get a Nobel Prize and so on. And yeah, it's far away. But I think it's good to have dreams somehow.
Absolutely.
And for this, when you are at a university in France, you need to go abroad, a so-called postdoc, to get a few years somewhere else. So that's how I went to Munich, to another lab where I was doing some research in oligochemistry, peptide chemistry, epigenetics. So something really, really different. And I love the environment there, even more international. First time for me to be in a foreign city, and I really liked it. I even managed to invite my parents that moved the border from France to Germany once. That was a win. And well, what happened is when I was in Munich, I met my future husband. Mm-hmm. So things changed. And as I was really in love, I decided, well, now it's 1.5 years. I am in a postdoc. It's time for me to do something else if I want to advance. I don't want to go back to France at that time. So let's try the industry around. And I saw that position. So this position, actually, it was at Roche Diagnostic in Penzberg, south of Munich. It was a position as a production leader in a chemistry environment. So I look at the position and I think the only thing I was fitting to was chemistry on it. But I'm also someone, so okay, if I don't try, the worst that can happen is to get a no. So I will send my CV. And actually got invited to the interview, first interview actually also for the industry. The last minute, it was in German. My German at that time was not so good. So I asked my husband, so he's German, to change the slide in German. of course, I sent my CV in German and I went to this interview. I didn't think the interview went so well with the HR department that at the end finished to speak with me in French. I think we finished the interview in French. I like to have met the team and also the colleagues I could also present. And I think here for me was also important to be transparent because I had also some question about, well, your German is perfect on slide and on CV. Well, when I speak, you see that it was not so perfect. So, of course, I did my homework. Huh? It's important for me to have things when I deliver that are good. And, of course, someone corrected it so that at least that part could be good. I was called the second time, so I was surprised because I was thinking, oh, no way I get the job. And when I entered the second interview, they told me at the end of the interview, well, you can sign your contract. We decided to hire you.
Wow.
I was surprised. I was also really, really afraid because I have no idea where I'm going to. I will be a leader of 15 people of a production of oligonucleotides and peptides. I've never been in a production environment, and all my colleagues and most are men, but okay, let's try. Actually, when I started in that position, I realized that the biggest challenge was not the chemistry, because I was a chemist and you have your people. The biggest challenge was the leadership, because you work with people. You have to make sure the team is a team. But I really fell in love with being a leader. And that's where I found my passion of bringing people together, understanding how people can work together for a great purpose. Because Roche has a great purpose, right? We bring solutions to patients. And so I quite fast found my way in this position. Also, I was thinking, I go in production, oh, it will be boring. I was seeing, like, you know, every day is the same thing. And here, I really want to say, if you want a job where things happen every day, just go to production. Because it's a lot of, challenges coming. Things are not like we could think that it's really stable. It's always things you need to react, you need to be proactive. We come to the pandemic at a later time. And one thing I learned, and I always remember also, I have asked actually the HR a few months later, why did he hire me? And he told me, well, I would never have hired you in that position. I wanted to have you in R&D. But he said, but your boss really insisted. So I went to my boss and said, what did you see? Because I didn't get really the background of being a leader and having production experience. And I will also remember what he told me, because he said, well, I went for diversity because we never had someone, you know, coming from another countries, maybe in that environment. We have only men. It was good also to have a woman again. They had a woman before as well. And I was just different and say, okay, he told me it's a risk taking, but it's also 6 months risk taking because we have a 6 month try. And I had also to learn German to be successful, because my coworkers, they were speaking only Bavarian.
Bavarian, wow, okay.
A lot about communication. But what I remember, why it accompanied me today is really because I hire a lot of people in the last 15 years at Roche. And sometimes I am also biased and think, oh, this person, they don't have this requirement, or it will take too much time to train someone there. But then I remember that someone gave me my chance, actually.
Interesting.
And it worked quite well. And I think that's a good message I want to bring. Because it's a risk-taking, but if you feel, you see potential in someone, you should stay on it. So I moved afterwards from this position to a more global matrix role. It's a role at Roche where you are responsible of production, manufacturing, supply chain, and procurement for a portfolio. So whatever happened in that space, you need to make sure that things are taken care on, and you sit at the same table as the business. So what you can learn really is how ideas are generated, how solution comes from the start, how you launch a product, still representing the more operative part. When I applied for that role, I decided to apply because I learned in a project that I really like to, again, bring people together that may not be under my leadership, but it's another way of leading. And I wanted to learn a bit more about it and to develop in that direction. When I applied for the role, of course, I spoke with some of the stakeholders, and one of the feedback was, ooh, you are too young.
Interesting.
Young woman, you have a French accent, and you know, the business people, they are all really experienced men, so no way you get the job.
Wow.
My reaction to this was, you know what, I will apply now because I want to prove the contrary. But what I want to say here also is sometimes it can be also really still having this bias against, well, you know, Aline, you need to be protected, so I will protect you, don't do that. And I always say to my mentee today, especially if they are women, to not listen to this because it's not helping and we don't need to be protected, right?
Yes.
We need to do our way. And I got the job. So here also I've asked why, because there were a lot of more experienced people. And actually, that's exactly what made the difference, that I had no bias, you know, on the business. I was 3 years at Roche, so I could really see differently the different topics and have another way of implementing solutions. It was a hard time. It's always going into cold water. I learned a lot. I was more global. I went to San Francisco. I went to Rotkreuz, worked with a lot of different functions, R&D, business. And that's really a job I really love, to really learn the end-to-end and understand how things are getting together. And what I was missing, however, was still having my team, and getting, again, to a direct leadership role. I got the opportunity through my leader at that time to go to an assignment to Rotkreuz as a head of quality control. So here I was asked to take on the role, knowing I had no also experience in quality control, but I had good experience in solving problems, being proactive, bringing teams together. And that's what was needed in that organization as well. So I moved in an assignment to Switzerland, where I stay now for years. I was heading the quality control, bringing also a new team together, working for a business where it was really, really important to get the product to the customers. Because that was blood gas product. So you do a lot of analysis also in the hospital and so on. So they need we were doing the sensors and we were doing the reagents and the instruments. So it's so important that to not have any stockouts, right? And then the leader I had at that time moved to another position. And here I was pushed to apply for taking on the role of the entire site for the blood gas production in Rotkreuz. When I say this, is because when the position went out, I was also thinking, it's too early.
Interesting, yeah.
Maybe I'm not good enough right now. And here, someone really pushed me and told me, Aline, if you don't try, so go for it. And I got the role on this to lead the site production. And I was leading also a team. Who was actually, these people were my colleagues before. So it's not easy, but what I loved is from day number one, they told me, you know what, we will support you. Because we are a team, we are all in this, and that's our spirit. And that's really great. It was a really great environment to work. And it's nice to feel supported, you know, not only by the management, but also by the people with who we are working. So I took on the role and the pandemic came. Was also interesting when you are in operations, because having also the blood gas, it was so important to have no stock out demand went really, really, really up. So we needed also a lot of creativity to ramp up production a lot, being on site, having no contamination. So everyone was in home office, we were all on site. But also here, I think what is important is always to think, what is the impact I have and why I are doing this? And I think a purpose has never been so so clear also for all co-workers at that time. We had a lot of reflection as leaders in operations. How do we bring Schoffler people to think more about why they are here, the products they touch, where is it going? And actually, through the pandemic, the purpose was there. And everybody was working, even 7 days. They were there and doing it.
Yeah.
So it was also a challenging time, but also really rewarding time. And after that, I was asked actually to take on the role as my role today. So global head of operations and quality at diabetes care. And I have to say, so in my role today, I'm responsible for the internal production, but also all our external network, our global engineering, so building machines, validation, supporting production, the business excellence strategy. I have procurement, I have supply chain, and I'm also responsible of quality, digital quality, and regulatory. So it was two different worlds, quality and operations, they brought together. And so I was asked to take on that role. My first reaction, oh, no.
It's not the most obvious fit, I must admit.
It's big. It's a lot. And so I had many, many conversations. And I had also some mentors. And I think the discussion I have with mentors female were a bit different than the one I had with some of that mentor male. But here the balance was really good because it helped me actually to take the right decision, but also see different aspects. One aspect was it's a transformation as well. It's a big role. So it has also an impact on my mental health.
Yes.
I am strong enough to do this. Diabetes care is so close to the patient, so it's also every product is so important. And on the other part was more about, well, you know, you sit as a business table. That's also a hard conversation to have, but a completely also new world. What actually drive me to go there is I had one conversation with a former colleague in diabetes care, which told me about the importance of the product, about what they were doing, about being so close to the patient, how they work also for getting access. And it really resonated to me actually in, wow, I want to be part of it. So I accepted the role. And I never regret to have done this. It's a great role. I could build my team from the beginning. We had a lot also of, you know, throwback, but successes. And I learned, so I came from a diagnostic part, which is where you are more close to hospitals, to diabetes care, where you have conversation with your neighbor, people of your family, having the products, and completely having another aspect. And also, I discovered a completely new organization. It's the same company, but it's another purpose. So both are really great. But when you want to learn about patient centricity and what it is to understand customers, for me, diabetes care, the last year was where I was really feeling the being close to the customer and the patient and what we were doing. So yes, that's where I am today. Still continue to push for new solutions and working with my team. And so that's a bit my story.
Beautiful.
In short.
Thank you so much. There's a couple of things that I want to talk to you about. There's a thread that goes through your career journey where you've made certain moves, which is confidence. And the first job that you applied to, you talk about not knowing if you're even right to apply. The only thing that you matched on the job description was chemistry, I think you said. It's an interesting way to frame it, because I imagine actually there was probably quite a lot that you did match, but I can accept, you know, you weren't the perfect person for the role. It's interesting to me though, because I think that's quite a We talked about it actually, Jessica and I, with the people that we hire as well. And we've had, you know, we specifically put on our job descriptions like, look, if you don't meet all of this, that's okay. Still apply if you want to work here. Because it's interesting that that's in some employment HR conversations, there's been something around like that influencing a male versus female trait, that it will be more comfortable for males to perhaps give it a go, ride on that confidence, and perhaps more of a trait for young women is that they wouldn't feel as comfortable doing so because they are going to look for more exacts. I think though, what's really interesting in your journey is that you literally overcame that in your first role. You continued to feel it, but took the evidence from the first time that it worked and you've gone, oh, this works. I think the other part of that is you are paying that forwards as well, because again, you mentioned someone gave me my chance and it worked. I think the crucial bit there is, and it worked as well. And I think it's very notable here, I think, for employers, people that lead teams, that actually when people consider diversity, and really here we're talking about diversity of thought, aren't we? We're talking about the diversity of thought that comes along with considering the diversity of the individual, that diversity is not a tick box. It is an element that adds value to a team. And you've really proved that. My question at this point is, how do you feel about that initial confidence? You know, is do you have things in your mind of like, what if? What if you never applied? And actually, what do you say now to people? And I guess flesh out that bit for me where, you know, someone gave me my chance and it worked. In you building your team and your mentorship of young women in this scenario, this confidence piece, I imagine, plays a relatively big part.
Certainly, as you say, there were certainly other box I ticked. But at that time, you know, reading at this, not being in the business, I had this impression that I was not really the perfect one. What I really like for me, it's always to learn. So I would not apply for a role when I will not learn.
Interesting.
So that's also the thing I always think about. If I fit 100%, what it is I will learn in that role. So then I will dig a bit more with the organization to understand. And that's also what I say to some of my mentees I have, or people asking me, because that's what you say. They read the you know, the description, say, I don't have this, I don't have that, I don't have this one. So, well, it just says that you will learn it. Is it something you want to learn? And for me, I really wanted to have experience in industry, and that was a way to enter the industry. Having said this, I think it's also really important to, you know, not apply for a role just to apply, but I had my thought about it. So when I read it and see only chemistry, when I came prepared, right? So leadership, I've never led a team. However, I have led small projects. So I did a bit of reflection about it and analog. So I think the question is, we need to be prepared for the interview, understand the role, but also we need to want the role. So if the story about it and why we want the role is not clear in the head, I don't think we will be successful. And I had that experience as well, where there was one role I thought I wanted, and then I went into the interview, got the question, and it was not good. And I reflected and I said, well, I blocked myself actually, because I thought that's what I wanted, but then no, it was not resonating to me. And I got the same feedback. So that's good that it's seen from both sides. But I encourage a lot of women coming to me, but also men, actually. There are some as well. To really not think about what they can't, but what are the strengths they have, what have they learned, where they can build on for the next job. And make the story about this, because it's about us, about the skills we have, and not about, you know, the 100% fit of the position. And the other side of it is organization hiring. As you said, if you hire and you know the profile you want and people are clear, so maybe it's also not a good fit.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love how empowered you sound at that point, you know, where you've realized, like, actually, I don't want this. And actually, I'm sort of interviewing you here as well. And actually, I'm willing to reflect on things that you say, because isn't really that the best hiring scenario? You're both trying to find out whether this is a best fit for each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a mindset that I know that we really want to have in those scenarios. It's not about picking, like, is this person good enough? It's not really about that. Because if someone is motivated, to your point about purpose, if they have purpose, if they are driven, if they are willing to learn, these are all qualities. These are all qualities that make someone a better fit for a job. And actually, that's really the ideal scenario. Part of that, though, is having the confidence to go, yeah, I'm good for about 75% of this. I'm good for about 80% of this. And actually, the other 20% of it that is mentioned in the job description, I'm going to be really committed to learn it. And I'm going to be committed to learn it because I'm really interested in those things. And actually, this is what I've done so far. And it's really nice. I really like that. The other thing I wanted to bring up about your journey, sort of another thread that has gone through, is leadership. Because again, at the very start, you said you were surprised and afraid. You were going to be the leader of 15 people, but it's something you fell in love with. You fell in love with leadership. You learned leadership. You discovered that you were good at leadership. This perhaps also talks to the quality of whoever hired you at this point to spot these things in you, based on that interview process, based on their ability to speak to you and understand what you were saying and to learn more about you. But you talk about understanding or getting to an understanding of how to get people to work together. And you talked about the word purpose in that as well. My question here is, how do you go about your leadership? What do you think those qualities are? And how does one go about putting together a team around a unified purpose? What's the secret, Aline? Tell me the secret.
Don't know if I have a secret. As a leader, for me, it's important is full authenticity. But also, you know, for me, you get what you see, right? So I will bring the facts on the table that you like it or you don't like it, because I think it's so important that you are true to yourself. You know, we speak a lot about how important authenticity is. But then you need to be authentic to translate it to the organization. For me also, it's important. And so when I say this, I'm putting things on the table. Often with a team or different teams, Cox functional team or your own team, it's a lot about communication. And it's a lot of, you know, people being different, having different values, different way of understanding each other, different languages. I said before, my engineers, they don't have the same language as my procurement people or my manufacturing people. So sometimes we are lost in translation. So for me, it's really about asking the right question, trying to bring people, if there is a conflict, let's speak about it. Let's have an environment that is safe enough, so people feel they can speak in the team and also share their struggle, so that we can help each other. And for me, that's what I do. Because if I don't do this, my people will not do it. So if I struggle and I don't know, I just take my team with me and say, okay, I have an issue. So we have an issue. And I need you to solve it because I'm not a specialist or I need your input. So I work a lot also with feedback to each other, but also towards me. I made a lot of reflection and I bring my team, my colleagues, my leader into that reflection as well. So improvement is important for me. Improvement and learning. At the same time, it's not everybody who is like that. So sometimes it can be when someone is really direct, difficult. So I always try to get how people are reacting, what are their value, and how we can connect together. And I think it will also trust. The other thing I'm a fan of is the concept of my first team. We tend in a big organization to focus on our people, what is good. However, my first team are my colleagues, because if I don't work well with my colleagues, my people will not work well with these interfaces.
And, interesting.
It is also not sometimes a natural way, because I tend to feel my home are my people. On the other one, if I don't collaborate well with my colleagues, my people will see it. Why should they collaborate well with the other part? So, and I don't say I'm good at it every day. I'm not. So it's also maybe on Friday or during the weekend, having a kind of always retrospective. And sometimes I come back to the colleague or I come back to the coworker and say, hey, I think here I was wrong. Here is what happened. But that's what I learned. And I think it helps. It helps a lot. Now on building team, because that's something I was confronted to it. My team today are almost all men. I have one superwoman and also two superwomen who are actually matrix leaders. And the big organization are led by men. So often I get, Aline, you advocate for women and, diversity. Look at your team. And I say, well, good. Diversity is something else. It's not only women and men. But indeed, if you look at gender, it's true.
Yes.
What happened when I built my team is that no woman was applying.
Wow.
So when I searched my head of engineering, I think 95% were men and 5% women. And of course, we go for the best one. So the chance that it's a woman is really low. And that's why I really advocate for it, because it's also the result that at the end, also at a higher level, we don't have many women applying for position.
Interesting. It's a great answer. And you talked a lot there about leading by example. Seems to be what you are comfortable doing. You're very much do as I do. So, which is nice, because then you're not getting mixed messages with someone that says, don't do as I do as I say, which is a lot more difficult. So leading by example, yes, I completely agree. And one thing I just want to raise there as well is leading by example with certain behaviors that are uncomfortable. Certain behaviors that may be uncomfortable at the time, but actually have payoff later on, like admitting fault. And I think this is really interesting, because I think some leaders that want to be perceived as knowing everything, being right all the time, it can be quite exhausting, that, because it is very clear that we're all human and that we are not right all the time. We do make mistakes. And yes, admitting fault is, I think, an extremely important quality of modern leadership. I really do. Because you're quite right. By modeling those behaviors, you can affect those in those that you're leading. The one I really liked, actually, what you talked about, is how I interface with my colleagues, my peers. and that being reflected then in those that I lead with how they behave. I think that's really interesting. That's not one that I actually had thought of previously, but you're right. The way that I interact with people that are similar to me, I think, yeah, does affect, of course affects. I think one thing I did recently is I met with a competitor CEO, for example, and we had a really nice meeting where we talked about the mutual difficulties of running companies like ours. In fact, I've done this twice. In fact, I've met with two competitor CEOs and, you know, took a selfie at the end of it and smiled and wished each other all the best. There's enough in the market for us to both put food on the table. So, you know, good luck out there, so to speak. And it was interesting, you know, privately I had a few conversations with people in the team and, you know, they asked a lot of questions like, why did you do that? And they wanted to learn that. And, you know, having given my answers for that, you're right, that will affect how those people, you'd hope anyway, would at least affect in some small way the way that they will meet people at different agencies and media companies and be civil and be nice and to be encouraging and to, you know, all those things. It's nice. It's really interesting. And I think it's such a powerful way to lead is leading by example. But obviously the point I want to come to next is what you mentioned there about the lack of diverse representation in those people applying for certain roles. We know that there is a push for women in STEM, so science, technology, engineering, maths. Like, we know that this exists. What do you think is the importance of encouraging young women into these STEM subjects? Do you think it is an advantage to those women to be in those roles? And do you think it is an advantage for those industries to have more women? Is it one? Is it both? And why?
I think it's both. I don't know if I would say an advantage for me to be in that space, but as I said, being a child, I loved, you know, I was really curious and.
Well, yeah, and you don't want to be discouraged, right? By
exactly
extreme representation one way, which puts you off. So that, yeah, I guess it does benefit in those terms.
Exactly, and being where I am, I mean. Roche is a really diverse company and push also a lot for it. So it's a great place to be as a young woman or as a woman to be at the table, to have a voice and also to encourage other industries. So definitely, I would say if little girls or people after their PhD wants to go into healthcare companies, they should because that's a great environment to be. Now, to your other question, I think there is many advantages to have more women. So first, the more diverse you are at the table, the more diverse you bring ideas. And also, I think my leadership may be also driven by the fact I am a woman, because I am also sometimes more inclined to lead by, you know, being more sensitive. So EQ as maybe, you know, top down. That's not the way I am. I don't say it's also not the way a man is, but maybe it's something more intrinsic to a woman, having a bit more sensitivity in the way of people are talking, yes. Speaking, and so on. The other point that is scary, I would say, when we speak about technologies, and that is getting bigger and bigger, it's healthcare for women. We have seen in the last years that there is a gap in healthcare for women. So I got some examples. So Roche has started also a program, so it's an X project with Tell My Stories, where we encourage women to tell their stories about what they have seen being in the hospital or going to the doctor. Because if you hear that story, you cannot, you know, say, oh, no, it's not true, or oh, it never existed. So one of them was that if you are a young woman and you feel you will have a heart attack, you may be sent home, actually, because you will be maybe told, well, you know, that's not the normal symptom. You are too sensitive. It will be detected later. Also, some research shows that if you have a woman doctor, you may get, as a woman, a diagnostic for heart attack earlier than a man, because a woman doctor may be more empathetic to this,
yes.
Maybe more, have more feelings about it. A good example, because now I'm, 15 years in the diagnostics, I know the importance of doing early diagnostics. And so something like, I'm getting also older, so I'm looking, okay, when are coming the next 50 years or something like this? And something like menopause, for example, was something that was not discussed at all. It was a taboo. And if you have a younger woman speaking about, what would be the next thing we need to look at, you would not think also about it. But it's impacting every woman. It's not known yet what, how hormones play the role. And there is almost nothing that can help. Even in the education of gynecologists, it's not in. Having said this, what I mean by that is there is a need for more women in R&D at the table on making decisions on where is it we want to go in the next, space for improving health. Because then you may have a more diverse ideas and you may think about an impact of, hormone therapy or an impact on different symptoms a woman can have when having a heart attack as a man, for example. That's where also diversity plays a big role in the solution we provide to the market. And having more women having a voice will help change the different bias. And I think I speak always for me, I bring more ideas or more power where I can identify myself.
Yes.
Well, if I am a man or a woman, we will not identify ourselves to the same thing at the end. That's why it is important. You have spoken just before about collaborating, right, with maybe competitors. So as part of the project we have at Roche, we also enable, startups, femtech startups to get a voice. We do a lot of advocacy because it's also important that it gets more funded. And it will also close the gap. So I think also here we have a role to play in collaborating with each other. And a bigger company may have more power to bring this, at the front than smaller companies. I have also read, and I found it was also interesting on the femtech that if you are a founder, a woman founder, you will get more funding from a woman, another woman founder. And if you are funded by a woman, you may get less chance to be funded next time by a man because there would be the analogies that, the relationship was based on other considerations and the merit of this person. I think it was in organizational science. So research tried to look at it. So there are numbers. And I was also surprised about it. But that shows why collaboration and awareness is so important. Because the more women we will have, the more also we get maybe funding for the company and then it will become really normal.
Yeah. And actually, following these things through to actually get a better picture of the true outcome where these things have happened. So to your point before about someone gave me my chance and it worked, I think there's going to be interesting data that comes out when we look more longitudinally at those companies that did get, that were female founded, that were invested by female angels to begin with, that yes, whether consciously or subconsciously, when you look at the organizational science, whether those, male or other investors that were looking later perhaps thought, oh, okay, maybe it was something else rather than pure merit, I'm not going to invest. It'd be interesting when we watch those companies go forwards, because of course, there's going to be a spread of what happens, and it's going to be how does that spread compare against normal? Is there more or less chance of X, Y, or Z? And actually, it's going to be clear, isn't it? It's going to be clear that the more diverse, the better. It's going to be clear that it is not significantly impacted on success negatively if a female fund has female investment to begin with, for goodness sake. Like, it is clearly not going to be the case. It's actually most likely going to be the case that when you assume a standard distribution of merit across all demographies, it's going to be clear that there are a great deal of uncovered value. And that's really interesting to me when people talk about equality of opportunity versus equality of outcome, for example, and things like mandating that certain numbers of certain diversity quotas are at the very top versus ensuring that the opportunity to become X, Y, or Z is as much as possible. And should we be aiming for equality of outcome or equality of opportunity? It's interesting to me because you talked about that actually earlier, because you said that no women were applying. And really, in that example, you can't even mandate an outcome because no one's actually applied. But equality of opportunity is very interesting to me. Equality of outcome and mandating certain representation at board level, for example, I think does have its merits, especially at a time where you're going from zero to one. I think then it is probably quite important to, you know, mandate something to get things going. But then to your point, it becomes merit when there is equality of opportunity. When there is equality of opportunity, when everybody feels that they can apply, then when we select the best is more diverse and the best is better than it was before, because now we have the talent across lots of different diverse groups, and therefore the best is better than just looking at one group as it was previously. And so I think it is so important to talk about that. I think it's so important to talk about actually that nuance that you just mentioned, the nuance of when a female founder is invested by a female investor, the next investors that look at that assume something. That's actually quite nuanced and actually something that I've not heard before, but it's something that I can understand. I can believe that it exists. And yeah, I think very important to raise that. So thank you for doing so. When you mentioned Roche are doing a pro, you mentioned one or two programs there that Roche are doing, and you mentioned it's a diverse company, and actually you're pleased to be there. They've, you know, you're there and your leadership is there, and that's helping things in your kind of your team and your environment and your kind of universe and world. What else is Roche doing that makes it a diverse company? Like, what are some things that make you say that?
So many things. So as I said, this project has been started with a lot of voice and advocacy and partnership. Internally, we have a lot of, I think we have 25 networks that started to support women. 25 internal networks, and you know, they interact also together. When I was in Rotkreuz at the beginning, I was co-leading one of them at the beginning. And it was also a really interesting discussion on, oh, do we invite men on the table, or do we want only women? Or so really a lot of discussion. But at the end of the day, it's really about supporting each other, having, you know, sometimes someone speaking that also advocate, tells the story and help. So it works quite well. Now I always follow the networks, things have great breakfast, it's becoming bigger. So this kind of thing helped also within a company, but also outside, because it's spread and there is also different organization. Now, if you look at also a diabetes care, for what is really important, we are also really diverse in a way that we always try to have best diversity of discussions and topics. But also for us, diabetes care is a lot about access of our products to different countries. I'm trying to get the right number, but I think it's 537 million people with diabetes today, globally adults.
Wow.
But only slightly about 100 million of them have access to blood glucose monitoring technologies. Only 100.
Wow.
And if we look in the future, in 2050, it will be 1.3 billion people with diabetes, according to the Diabetes Federation. So it will really become a greater public health issue.
Yeah.
And for me, being a diverse company means also making sure that you don't think only reach some region,
yes,
but everywhere.
Yes.
So on one hand, we want also, you know, to build a workforce that is serving or that is mimicking the society we have. So on one hand, you know, we have the product we bring to biggest country, but we are also collaborating a lot with other company. Like we have a program I really love is Changing Diabetes in Children.
Mm.
It's a big partnership with different collaborators, but Novo Nordisk as well, where we are really delivering free life-saving blood glucose monitoring equipment, medical supply to more than 46,000 children living with type 1 in 29 low and mid-income countries. So it's really helping getting what is really important to children. And recently, because speaking also about women, we had that program around, it's the Screen Her initiative. It's in Pakistan. It's also in a collaborations with the Green Star Social Marketing Limited. It's a non-profit organization and it helps women in rural and peri-urban areas of Pakistan to really access diabetes, the risk, education, but also the testing.
Mm.
Because in Pakistan, you have 400,000 pregnancy affected every year by diabetes, also the gestational diabetes. And it's really, really important that they get this. So here we had also make a lot of progress. We have access to, I think, across 70 different clinics in six cities, major cities. We had 20,000 screenings that have been conducted, and we want to go to more than 1 million women. And that's an important and a really great purpose. And I always think, you know, this kind of initiatives, they don't come from only one person. They come from many people coming together, looking at it, and not only profit, but really, how can we make the difference for everybody?
Mm. And good leadership to enable everyone to think that way as well.
Yes, for sure.
So, Aline, before I let you go, I want to talk about, well, we started obviously by hearing your journey up until being Global Head of Operations for Roche Diabetes Care. Obviously, you've talked a lot about your motivations and a lot about what drives you, leadership, purpose, all those different things. But one thing we've skirted around is what do you actually do? What is a Global Head of Operations for a part of Roche? So what's a day in the life, or what's a week in the life? What's your sort of, what do you do in an average day or an average week?
Thank you. So Ira, also it's a really diverse role, I would say. So my team is really responsible for, if I can say end to end, it's from, you know, the material you need to buy to be able to produce products, to bring them to the warehouse. I have a team responsible to bring the product to the customers.
Mm.
And overall, a team supporting the entire production, and then the one looking at the quality of the products, is there any issue in the countries, protecting the right to operate from Roche, and making sure that, you know, every patient is safe with our products. So how does the journey look like? You can imagine is a lot of different topics. I spend a lot of time with my team. It's important, you know, we have small check-ins to see, okay, what is going on? Do we need support from each other? So getting in connection with what is happening. I have a lot of discussion around production stability and output, understanding also the challenge we encounter during the week. Is there anything we need to solve as an issue because it may have an impact to the patient not getting the product? We have also, we work a lot in terms of project with R&D together, innovation. Where are we in the next, I would say, product we want to bring to the market? Having this team, of course, we have a lot of actions in the entire portfolio. So it's really sometimes making sure that sometimes all the puzzle can come together and there is no pieces missing somewhere. Spend also time with stakeholders and of course, my direct peers and my leaders, asking for support also if needed. So it's a lot of really different actions. And sometimes we go invited to a podcast. So that's great. That makes a nice break during the day.
Very nice.
But I like, I mean, mostly spending time also with my people. And it's always difficult, but taking the time also for my mentees to, you know, explain the journey, coach, and try to support, because it's also what gives sometimes a lot of energy between a lot of firefighting, I would say. So the to get back to what I said at the beginning, if you want a job where you are not born, I would say go to operations and quality. It's a great journey.
Lovely. And yes, when you're managing getting the product from you to the patient and responsible for the quality of it, it's quite a lot of problem solving, I imagine. There's probably, if everything works and everything's going well, there's probably very little to do. Whereas actually, yes, there's a lot of, I imagine if you like problem solving, you'll be good at it too. So Aline, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Yeah, I've really enjoyed talking to you. I really enjoy working for you. I'll see how SOMX goes, but if there's a job going,
great.
I'd love to work for you. It sounds great. But yeah, I love your style of leadership and how you've talked about it. I think it's really nice. It's really important. More women in STEM jobs contributing in a way that affects the industry is great for industry. It's great for them. If indeed that's what they want to do, they should not be put off. They should lead with confidence and people like you mentoring them. I think it's awesome. And really like the sound of what Roche is doing. It sounds awesome. So for people that want to learn more about you and to get in touch with you, or they want to learn more about Roche and the Roche Diabetes Care part of Roche, where's the best place for them to go?
They can go to my LinkedIn profile.
Perfect.
And start the discussion.
Excellent.
We have also great Roche representation, on the web. But if someone is interested, just reach out.
Awesome. Aline, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening and making it all the way to the end of this episode. Remember to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. And you can head to the description of this episode to follow me on all of my social media so you don't miss out on any of the latest health tech content.